This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2019, held on March 22 and 23, 2019, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
All right. Well, I'm glad you're here. It wouldn't be any fun by myself. Glad that that you're here. And this is a technical topic, not as inspiring as some of what we've heard today. So I'm going to launch in. I have a little bit too much content. I'm hoping that we can have some time for questions, and quite frankly, if we get to the end and I used all the time, I'm glad to stick around and take questions from you too if I don't give you the time while we're during our 45 minutes. So today the topic is on deputized fundraising, how we can use that to support our ministry. So today we're going to be covering what is deputized fundraising, sometimes called staff support raising. There's a few other names for it as well. What are the legal requirements, guidelines to be compliant with that? And then we'll look at some scenarios. So I didn't feel okay with just dumping a bunch of rules at you and saying understand these. So we'll look at some scenarios that will hopefully bring some definition to the rules that we're going to be looking at, and then some practical compliance tips, like here are the big takeaways, at least the low-hanging fruit of how you can work at being compliant in this area. So what is deputized fundraising? There's a variety of different scenarios, but I'm going to focus on the mainstream scenario for deputized fundraising. Typically when a worker is asked by a church, by a ministry, to raise funds for that worker's support, whether it be their salary, associated expenses, fringe benefits. Sometimes deputized fundraising involves fundraising for projects too. Now, that can be the case. Usually there's not a lot of legal implications that come up in terms of deputized fundraising when a mission asks its workers to raise funds for a specific project. You probably can take some of the principles we talked about and apply it to that, but the focus of what we'll be talking about is staff support raising. So how do we deputize workers? If you're a ministry leader, how do you deputize your workers to raise funds for their support, their expenses? If you're a worker, how do you go about doing that in a way that's actually compliant? Because it requires the cooperation of the ministry, the worker, and the donor to actually make this all work. So in a deputized fundraising context, a worker is given the charge, the delegation, or the mandate to go out and raise funds to cover their expenses, expenses for the worker's salary and other maybe fringe benefits, maybe reimbursable expenses are paid from the funds raised, so there's some sort of tracking of coming in, going out. And then sometimes the ministry will take a percentage for admin expenses. That's typically permitted. So maybe they say there's bookkeeping, so we're going to take a 5% of all funds raised to cover admin expenses. Some benefits are, you could think about a lot of different benefits of it. These are big three that I thought about. It does reduce the fundraising burden on the ministry itself. So if you have a ministry with 10 workers and $1 million budget, and each worker is costing about $40,000 to maintain, if they would all raise enough to cover the costs of their salaries, expenses, that reduces the amount that the overall ministry has to raise by a good chunk of money, by about 40%. So the workers can share in that. There's a personal connection that every worker can bring in the fundraising effort. The ministry may not know their church, their family, their friends, but the worker does and can sort of tap into that. So it can greatly increase the potential pool of donors. So I think that's part of what makes it attractive to ministries, to workers, is let's reach into that connection. And then it can create a partnership, accountability between the givers and the workers. They're not just off being supported by the ministry and have no connection at home. They actually are accountable to their givers and hopefully communicating with them. And fostering connection and support even beyond the financial. So that's just the overview, and now we're going to dive down into the more sort of technical aspects of it. And when you think about legal compliance in this area, it's not an issue of, oh, am I going to go to jail if I get this wrong? It's not usually an issue of, is the nonprofit going to lose their 501c3 status? Although it could be in a sort of egregious violation situation, but it's more of deductible, non-deductible giving. So kind of in a nutshell, if you're running a non-compliant deputized fundraising program, or if an individual gift is not meeting all the tests, then it's not a deductible gift, even though it's given to, the check is written to a 501c3 organization. So it's very important to know, because the charities are usually issuing tax-deductible receipts. If it's a program that is not in compliance, you're issuing a tax-deductible receipt, you're basically saying, go ahead and take a deduction, even though the donor really ought not to be taking a deduction. And so only sophisticated donors really know to inquire into this. Those who aren't sophisticated may go ahead and deduct it on their tax returns, but if that gets discovered, then now your donors are in trouble if they weren't made aware of the requirements, or if the organization itself was not complying. So if the gift isn't compliant, it's not deductible. And I would say that the organization has a responsibility to inform donors if they're running a program that is not compliant, so that the donors know that, hey, maybe you can give towards the program, but you should not be taking tax deductions, which can be a little bit embarrassing maybe for the ministry if they're having to disclose that and say, thank you for your gift, but it's actually not tax deductible. So there's two tests that need to be met for any gift to be tax deductible. And it's the intended benefit test, it's the discretion and control test. And these are guidance. This is guidance that's given by the IRS. It's not anything written in the law, so to speak, or very heavily tested in court cases. It's the best guidance that the IRS has been willing to give on this topic. So we do what we know. The intended benefit test looks at the subjective intent of the donor as best it can determine, and the discretion and control test looks at how the ministry is running its deputized fundraising. Again, we're going to meet both tests. The intended benefit test is basically the IRS's attempt to look at whether the donor's intent or purpose of the gift was to benefit the worker, the individual worker, or to benefit the ministry. Now, how do you peer into the minds of donors? It's kind of difficult. If the IRS goes and asks a donor, you can guess what their answer is going to be if they had any prep at all about how they're supposed to answer. So the IRS doesn't bother, interviewing donors. They look at the circumstances and the communication surrounding the gift to determine whether it's likely or unlikely that the donor's intent was to benefit the worker or the ministry. So what are they looking for? So here's some examples of what the IRS is looking for in the circumstances and the communications to determine who the donor intended to benefit. Just in case it's not clear, if the donor intended to benefit the worker primarily, then that gift isn't deductible. Fails the intended benefit test, therefore it's not deductible. If the donor intended primarily to benefit the charity, then it passes that part of the test. So some things the IRS is going to look at: was the gift earmarked, or was it preferenced for the worker? And that word preference is very important. You're probably not going to use the word earmarked on giving, but the word preference should be an important word in a deputized fundraising program. If the worker uses the word, my preference is that this gift be used for so-and-so worker's expenses, then what the donor is really saying, at least in the eyes of the IRS, is my preference is that you use the funds in this way, but I understand that all funds given are under the discretion and control of the ministry, and if you wish to use it elsewhere, then you have the option to do that. So it is not a restriction, it is only an expression of the preference of the donor. So this requires a little bit of education of donors, but it is very important. It's even more important that donors be educated that they cannot restrict contributions for individuals. If they restrict contributions for individuals, it's going to fail this intended benefit test, almost guaranteed. So was the gift earmarked, was it restricted, or was it merely preferenced for the worker? Did the worker say things like, thank you for your gift to me, thank you for supporting me, as opposed to thank you for your gift to the ministry? And this is a really good book if you as a charity are running this type of program, or you as a worker are involved in this, I'd say this is probably not something every worker needs to buy, but every charity who has this program should buy the Guide to Charitable Giving. And they have some examples of language, improper and proper language. So appropriate wording might be, 75% of the support I need to raise for ABC Mission has been committed. Inappropriate wording would be, I have raised 75% of my needed funds. Or other appropriate wording would be, it's my responsibility to form a team of ministry partners who will support ABC Mission with monthly gifts and prayers. Inappropriate wording would be, I need a team of ministry partners who will support me with monthly pledges and support. So it's not very intuitive. You know, it kind of requires a retraining of the language, but as you're retraining workers and they're using the correct language, it's helping donors think about it in the proper way as well. And lastly, and pretty important, is did the solicitation or acknowledgement, those are two different things. So did the request for funds, maybe a response card that was sent with the gift as well, and then the acknowledgement gift, made the charitable receipt or a thank you letter, state that the ministry has complete discretion and control over the gift. That is evidence that the donor intended to benefit the ministry. So that's the intended benefit test. Again, it's looking at all of the circumstances. Who did the donor intend to benefit? So then the discretion and control test looks at whether the ministry, in fact, exercises proper discretion and control over funds received through a deputized fundraising program. So if we're looking at responsibility, whose responsibility it is to comply with these tests, I'd say the workers should be focusing on, especially on the intended benefit test and their communications with their supporters, as well as the charity should be focusing on communications. When we're talking about the discretion and control test, that's a little bit more organizationally focused a little bit more on the ministry. So the IRS has 10 factors that it thinks are important. I have about 3 or 4 that I think are important. So I'm going to, they're all important, but some of them are just a little more common and obvious that a healthy organization is going to do. So I'm going to focus on these bolded points. The rest of them there, they're in your notes, but you know, that's just sort of good, usually good governance, good supervision. I'm going to focus on where ministries tend to sometimes run into a little bit more trouble in this area. So the number 3 there, the ministry approves staff salaries, including maximum compensation. Salaries are based on a criteria other than the amount of money raised by a worker. There can be no commitment that contributions raised will be paid as salary or expenses. And that middle part there, salaries are based on criteria other than the amount of money raised, that's going to be a real hang-up for some organizations, because it's very easy and convenient to say, you know, we'd like to support you, we'll be the channel, but we can't give, you know, more than you raise. So we'll just give you whatever you get at the end of every month, and everybody will be squared away that way. So if you raise more, you get more. If you don't raise enough, you won't get enough. You got to go back and beat the bushes a little harder. And that is problematic, because the organization is not exercising discretion and control in that scenario. They're just saying, raise whatever you can, and we'll pay it out to you. So that is probably the most important factor in this discretion and control test, in my opinion, that if the ministry is running a model where they're paying out whatever comes in, that's the normal practice, they're probably going to flunk this test. Which, by the way, this test is not you must meet every requirement. It's a totality of the circumstances, which just means look at all the factors, even factors outside of these 10 factors, if there's something relevant, and kind of make a judgment call. Some people hate those kind of tests, but this is the way it is. But this one is very, very important, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say, even if you're doing pretty well on the other 9, if you're doing really poorly on this one, there's some cause for concern. Amounts paid as salary are reported as compensation to the extent required. So if you're giving money to your workers, you probably need to report that as compensation. Don't just give, a ministry can't give gifts to its workers for services that they're rendering. Reimbursements of legitimate ministry expenses are approved by the ministry according to ministry guidelines. So if a mission is reimbursing expenses of the missionary, the worker, out of their support account, it needs to be under some sort of guidelines for what is considered appropriate reimbursements. You can't just say, well, it's kind of your money anyway, so we're not going to be very particular about how we handle the reimbursement side of it. You have to set the policies for reimbursement and follow those policies if you're going to be reimbursing workers. Otherwise, it's a non-accountable plan and it all needs to be treated as compensation, which sometimes that's how ministries choose to do it. But then you have the tax ramifications of paying everything as compensation and no ability to save on taxes by reimbursing legitimate ministry expenses. Number 9 out of this list of 10 factors, regular communication through newsletters, solicitation literature, giver acknowledgments, etc., inform donors of the ministry's full control and discretion over its programs and funds. And this actually is sort of overlapping with the intended benefit test. If you were noticing, like, that focuses on the circumstances, the communication. So here it's saying the IRS is saying this is also part of the discretion and control test, but it is sort of an intersection of those two tests. So you kind of need them in both tests, and that's why communication, which is the responsibility of the workers and the ministry, why communication is so important, and using the right language, quite frankly, is so important. So with those factors, and you have them there in your notes if you need to refer back to them, but with those factors, I want to run through 3 different scenarios and see if we can put some meat on this skeleton that we're developing. So the facts here in scenario number 1, ABC Charity pays Mel Missionary $3,000 per month regardless of how much support he raises. Solicitations and contribution receipts state that ABC Charity has complete discretion and control over the use of all donated funds. The note on the memo line of a $1,000 check states, please only use this gift for Mel Missionary support. Mel Missionary writes a thank you note that says, thank you for supporting my work in the Congo. ABC Charity exercises budgetary control, monitors programs, screens, trains, supervises all its workers. Now the question being, is the gift deductible or not? Everybody have a firm answer in their mind? Shake or say, it is deductible. It is deductible or no, it's not deductible. I see some nodding, I see some shaking. More shaking than nodding. Some people are uncommitted to an answer, which is fine. So let's just run it through the tests. I mean, that's what you got to do when you have a set of facts, and you just got to kind of, what do the rules say? So the intended benefit test. The first factor there, the first fact doesn't really play into that. The second, solicitation and contribution receipts state that ABC Charity has complete discretion and control. That's good. So all the solicitations, all the acknowledgments are saying, hey, we have complete discretion and control over these funds. The note on the memo line of the check states, please only use this gift for Mel Missionary support. Now, it's nice that they use the word please, but they also said only use this for support. So that looks like a restriction. And if there's any bright line rule in this whole scenario, I would say it's that if it's restricted for only for the use of that particular worker and doesn't use the word preference, you probably have a non-deductible gift. Okay, so even though there's good communication, the fact that the donor obviously isn't with the program here, he's obviously ignoring the language and saying, I don't care what you're saying, I only want you to use it here. That's problematic. Now, if that was on a note, maybe the IRS would never notice it, but if they ever go back in the donor's records and look at that canceled check, that's going to be a red flag. That's going to jump out as far as the deductibility of that gift. The next line there, Mel Missionary writes a thank you note that says, thank you for supporting my work in the Congo. Not really ideal language, probably not enough to destroy the deductibility if everything else was okay, because they were, otherwise they're using the language of complete discretion and control. So I would say overall, in this scenario, we probably have a non-deductible gift. So what should the charity do if it gets a gift with this memo line, please only use this gift for this particular worker? I would suggest that it's an opportunity to educate the donor. It doesn't have to be a big deal where now we have a huge problem. It's just If the people handling the funds in the mission are cognizant of this issue, then they can alert their supervisor. Or they themselves can call the donor and say, we're really grateful for this gift. We thank you for sending it. We have some rules that we need to comply with in how our program works. And one is that we're not allowed to accept gifts that are restricted for our workers. We invite you to state your preference that it be used for the support of any of these workers. But if it's a restricted gift, we really can't issue a tax-deductible receipt. Now, if you're okay with, and I'm still, in character here, if you're okay with, not claiming this as a tax deduction, we're okay with going ahead and processing this. We'll send you a notice stating that this is a non-deductible gift, and you won't be able to claim a deduction. If you'd like to, the ability to claim a deduction, we ask that you send a check that you can state the preference, but is not restricted for only the use of this worker. And if the donor is interested in that, the tax deductible receipt issue, then they'll issue a new check that's preferenced for this worker. 99 times out of 100, it will still go into that worker's support account, and everybody will be happy. And from then on, the donor will be educated, and you won't have to fight with that issue with them. Scenario number two, ABC Charity pays Mel Missionary the amount that is in his support account at the end of each month. Reimbursements of approved ministry expenses are paid from his support account before wages are paid. Solicitations and contribution receipts state ABC Charity has complete discretion and control over the use of all donated funds. Note on memo line of the check states preference for Mel Missionary's support for work in Congo. It's credited to his support account. Mel Missionary writes a thank you note that says, thank you for supporting the work of ABC Charity in the Congo. ABC Charity exercises budgetary control, monitors programs, etc. Deductible or not deductible? Let's see, some general shaking of the head. Deductible, non-deductible, mostly saying no. So let's look at the intended benefit test. Go back to the test. What's the circumstances in the communication surrounding this gift? So we see that all solicitations, all contribution receipts state that ABC Charity has complete discretion and control. There's a note on the memo line that says preference for Mel Missionary support. We obviously have an educated donor because they're using the word preference. And Mel Missionary writes a thank you note that says thank you for supporting the work of ABC Charity in the Congo. I'd say that's perfect. I think we easily pass the intended benefit test here. We need to pass both tests, so we need to move to the discretion and control test. And we've got the 10 factors. The factors that we're looking at here as most crucial are the first two, especially the first one. ABC Charity pays Mel Missionary the amount that is in his support account at the end of each month. So that's a strong indication that the charity is not exercising discretion and control. They're just basically running a conduit, a servicing, comes in, goes out, not really exerting any meaningful control of that process. And also the issue that reimbursements of approved ministry expenses are being paid before wages or before salary. So basically if the worker raises $3,000 in the month and had $1,000 of expenses that are reimbursable under the ministry's approved plan. Maybe it was travel expenses to go, visit the people that the person's ministering to or something of that nature. So then they would pay that $1,000 out as reimbursement, which isn't taxable, and then they would only get $2,000 instead of maybe the $3,000 that they were entitled to as salary. So that's again an indication that the charity's not exercising discretion and control. There's actually a bigger issue with that, which is that $1,000, if the reimbursement is being paid before the full amount of approved compensation is being paid, then that turns that reimbursement into what the IRS would consider a non-accountable plan. Now, we're getting really technical. Basically, what that means is you have to treat it as a payroll distribution or wages instead of the reimbursable expenses. So you're not getting any benefit from reimbursing versus just paying it out as compensation. So if you have a set amount that the person's supposed to receive, if they don't receive that amount because there's not enough money in their support account, you can't be reimbursing expenses before that. And that's a very tempting thing to do because it does reduce the tax burden to say, well, first let's pay these reimbursements and then whatever's left will apply towards their salary. Now, if they're getting full salary, then you can make the reimbursements. You can save on the tax that way as long as you're running an otherwise compliant reimbursement program. So scenario number three, ABC Charity pays male missionary $3,000 per month as long as he has available funds in his support account. If he falls behind on support for more than 3 months, then his salary is cut in half until he catches up with his support. ABC Charity does not reimburse any of male missionary's expenses for any month in which he does not receive his full salary. Solicitations and contribution receipts state that ABC Charity has complete discretion and control over the use of all donated funds. Note on the memo line of a $1,000 check states preference for male missionary support for work in the Congo. Male missionary writes a thank you note that says, thank you for supporting my work in the Congo, and ABC Charity exercises the proper control over its workers. Is the gift deductible? Seeing some thumbs down. You think it is? I see a thumbs up. Okay. This is a little bit tough. And the reason it's a little bit tough, even for me to, who you know, looked into this, had time to study it, the guidance is just not always very clear. In fact, most of in this area is not that clear. I think it probably is deductible. I'll start with that. So let's go through the tests. The intended benefit test. We have the solicitation and contribution receipts are stating the discretion and control. That's good. The check says preference for. That's good. We have the thank you note that says thank you for supporting my work, which is a little too personal to be ideal. Probably not enough to be a big problem in the intended benefit test. And the reason I would say that's probably not as big an issue is that gift was given before the thank you note was given. Preference speaks pretty loudly. So a thank you note that uses a little too personal language is probably not enough. It probably is still going to pass the intended benefit test because the solicitation contribution receipts stated discretion control and the donor indicated that they were assenting to that discretion and control by the ministry. So the harder question is the discretion and control test in this scenario. So ABC Charity has budgeted an amount of compensation, which is good. You always want to have a budgeted amount of compensation for the worker. And they pay that amount as long as there's money there. So the question really that this scenario is begging is it okay to reduce a worker's compensation if they aren't raising sufficient support? And that's another thorny issue, a thorny question. Now, this is aside from the wisdom or desirability of doing it because a charity may want to just go ahead and be paying that worker whatever they need to live, to survive. So are they going to be slashing their wages if they don't raise enough support? That's a whole different topic, but can they legally do it? The best guidance I can find says, yes, you can reduce a worker's compensation if they are not raising the budgeted amount of support. Now, the IRS could come out and rule differently on that, but they haven't. They haven't said that you can't do that. That the key, I think, in having that sort of provision in your deputized fundraising program is don't tie it too closely. Make it a general statement of policy and don't have the statement of policy be whenever you don't raise enough, we reduce it to just whatever amount you raised. So in the scenario here, as long as there's sufficient support, it's being paid out. If there's a deficit for 3 months, it gets reduced until the amount has been replenished. I think that would probably be okay. I don't know 100% for sure, but that's my best judgment, knowing the circumstances there. The closer you get in a scenario like that to saying, the closer you get to how the monthly compensation you know, reacts to the amount raised, the weaker case you're going to have. So again, if the policy of the mission is to, we'll pay you $3,000, but in any month if you're short, we're only going to pay the amount that you raised, that's probably not going to work. But if you give a period of time and then you say, you know, if after this period of time, after there's a chance to, you know, increase efforts and you're still not raising enough, the mission is only going to go so far until it reduces that compensation once you get caught back up or raise again. If you're going to get into that sort of level of splitting hairs, you're going to need to pay some careful attention and get some counsel probably on how that's structured. I wouldn't want you to rely on my opinion, you know, with this particular scenario to say it's all good, because you got to look at the whole big picture. You also have to look at how you're doing on the other aspects of the discretion and control test. If you're very strong with every other aspect, you're more likely to survive here. If you're very weak on some others, you know, this could knock you down far enough to bring you out of compliance. So I want to talk a little bit about the issue of gifts for extra expenses of a worker, because this sometimes comes up. So we have this regularly budget amount maybe that workers are supposed to raise. But what happens if they have some extra expenses? Let's say they're moving overseas and they need to buy a vehicle, personal vehicle. Can they raise money for that, and can that be paid out to them? And unfortunately, we don't have a lot of clear guidance here either, but this is sort of the best that I can give you. If the one-time expense that they're raising the funds for is to purchase something that's owned by the ministry, then I think you're probably fine. So if it's a ministry vehicle, maybe the workers are going to use it for ministry type activities, then they can raise the funds, the ministry will buy the vehicle, no worries. Now, careful how you communicate still. Don't say it's my vehicle, give to, you know, towards purchase of my vehicle, but I think you're probably okay. If the one-time expense is to cover the personal expense of the worker, then you gotta consider a little bit more what's going on. So are the extra funds paid out as taxable compensation? Are they used to cover approved ministry expenses? I would say if it's ministry expenses that the funds are, extra funds are being raised for, again, you're probably in pretty solid territory, because you're raising money for the mission to cover those approved expenses. If it's extra compensation, maybe to buy that personal vehicle, then you got to consider, is raising another $10,000 and paying that out as compensation, is that going to result in an excess benefit, like an excess amount of salary, more than a reasonable salary for the worker? And you can probably look at that on an annual basis. Did the ministry approve the solicitation of funds? That's pretty important. So did the worker just say, I need a vehicle, and then go out and raise funds for it, and then say, please, you know, I raised all this extra money, now please pay it out so that I can buy this vehicle? That's putting the worker in the driver's seat, and so the charity's not exercising very much discretion and control there. But if the charity has a policy of saying, when we set up, you know, new workers overseas, we advise them to raise an extra $10,000 for these upfront costs, and they're personal expenses, but they're still budgeted costs, and so they authorize their workers to, you know, raise that extra money and pay it out within the first 2 months of them being there, or the first month, then you're probably going to be okay. So I want to run through some practical tips, and I think we're going to have a little bit of time for questions. Now, these practical tips are just basically a summary, or summarizing some of the things that we've learned, or maybe should have learned as we're going through this exercise, and sort of the takeaways. What are some of the takeaways? So all gifts given to support workers should be preferenced. They should not be designated or restricted. Maybe that means having a certain response card or certain response language that all deputized workers are using, which would include the all gifts, the third point there, the contribution is made with the understanding that ABC Charity has complete discretion and control over the use of donated funds. That would be helpful. So if that is accompanying a gift, that's strong evidence of the donor understands the restriction. If you're not using something like that, and the person's name appears anywhere in the note or the check, then look at the language, and preference is good. Anything else is suspect. Some charities do have a policy: anytime that a person's name appears on the check, they will refuse that check. If it doesn't have the word preference, that's probably a sound policy. If they say preference for, I think it's okay to accept that check, even though the worker's name appears on it. Workers should avoid saying things like, "Thank you for supporting me." Instead, they should thank the donor for supporting the work of the ministry. Again, just framing that in, "I'm working for the ministry. I'm helping the ministry raise support. Thank you for supporting the ministry," not "thank you for supporting me." And the proper communication is really, it's not intuitive. It does require education. It requires education first of ministry leaders. It requires education of ministry workers. It requires education, not so much of the donors on this particular one, but again, all three of those parties need to be working together in using the right frame of reference, frame of communication. So ministries may need to review fundraising communications of newer workers to make sure that they kind of have the picture. Compensation levels should be based on considerations other than the amount of money raised. That's really key. Really inconvenient sometimes, but really important to running a compliant program. Shortfall in fundraising can be a reason to reduce a worker's salary, but the salary should not be directly tied to the amount raised. So wisdom, professional advice, prudence used if there's some idea of we need to be able to reduce compensation if the sufficient amount of support is not being raised. So tread very carefully in that area. Reimbursement of expenses should not reduce the amount of salary being paid. Otherwise, you've got a non-accountable expense reimbursement policy, which could end up being very expensive for the worker and for the ministry. Fundraising for extra expenses should be pre-approved by the ministry. And extra funds in a worker's support account belong to the ministry, not the worker. We didn't really touch on it, but I think it's a natural result of what we've been discussing. So when a worker terminates the ministry decides what to do with the funds. Maybe if the worker's going to another organization that uses this type of deputized fundraising, or even if they don't, maybe they want to gift it to the new organization to help cover the expenses of the worker there. Maybe some organizations will have a severance policy. So when somebody leaves, or call it a reintegration or transition or whatever, pay out a month or two or three of that person's wages if there's adequate support there, so they can approve that. But the expectation should not be that the worker has control over what happens with those funds. So it's a good idea for a ministry to have a policy in place of what happens if there's surplus funds. That way everybody knows kind of what to expect. And if there's a desire to give some sort of severance pay, you've got a pre-existing policy that protects the decision to pay that severance. So questions. I must have talked a little faster than I expected. I'm glad to have time for some questions. Are there any questions about anything that I said? Be glad to take them.
So we have a church running a school, and we have two different bank accounts. And so we've had three different examples of people who have served as missionaries at the school for 6 or 7 years, and we wanted to raise money for a car for them. But we ran it through the church account instead of the school account, because the school was paying their salary. So we opened a Regina King replacement car fund in the church. It was announced that anybody could contribute to that. We wrote letters to her aunts and uncles and gave her letters that she could give to whoever. And then whatever amount was contributed to the Regina King car replacement fund was used to replace her car. But it was a gift from the church instead of a school. Is that a problematic?
So it was a personal car? What's your judgment? Choose our collective wisdom based on what we've learned. Is that okay or not okay? Nobody really wants to say because now we're in a real life example. So that's something that is not that uncommon. I would say that's those gifts were not taxed, should not have been claimed as tax deductions. And the reason for that being the fund was to benefit an individual, so to speak, and gifts given, you're basically restricted to that fund with the intent that they benefit an individual, so I think you're going to fail that intended benefit test.
And was part of the consideration the fact that they had been working at the school, which is a part of the church, and basically no one to help her because of what she did for the school?
Well, the realization that she was a VSer for these years and didn't have money to replace a car.
So it was kind of based upon the reason that she was contributing services to the school. Yeah. So that really would be, in the sense of probably think of formal compensation.
Yeah, that's so two issues. The one being deductible or not, I would say no. The fact that it wasn't properly paid out as compensation would also, if you remember, one of the factors in the discretion and control test was amounts paid as salary or reported. So was it paid as salary? Not necessarily, but it probably should have been reported as compensation. Yeah. Any other questions?
Somewhat in relation to that, when you talk about the IRS looking at reasonable salary, and when you look at startup costs, saving for, make sure you move to the farm field, need to purchase a vehicle. If you have a policy in place that they're expected to raise a certain amount for startup costs, and then have a policy in place to the ongoing maintenance of a house or a car as a way to tap into excess funds, does the IRS look at all at the amount of salary these people are receiving? Like, it seems like the heart behind is they are trying to keep in organizations from funneling hundreds of thousands of dollars to people. They're looking at the level that most of our ministries are on, where they're getting $30,000-$40,000, they get an extra $10,000. Is that going to play into the factor of whether it's a reasonable salary?
I have never run into an Anabaptist mission where reasonable salary was a factor, unless it was somewhere where somebody was really not doing hardly anything for the organization and receiving a certain, you know, mediocre sort of salary. So there, the time invested was not measuring up with the amount paid. But assuming a person is working pretty much full time, we're usually a long ways from excess
so does
compensation.
Does that gray area in some of these a little bit, or should you not even think about the fact that we're at such a low level of funds that the IRS isn't going to scrutinize it as much?
I think it makes a difference in the sense that you don't have to worry so much about whether it's an excess benefit, but you still have to look at, was it pre-approved by the ministry? You know, were they exercising discretion and control over approving this expense and raising the funds for it? But most times you're not going to have to worry about the excess benefit, because on an annual basis, the salary is usually pretty piddly compared to, you know, market rates for wages.
Question. Mark. As far as you have brought up the fact that ministry setting the salary level, if in the case where they didn't raise the level of support necessary, does it weaken the plan if the ministry doesn't pay the established salary level on continuing basis, even though they don't raise the support, or they just kind of sort of stop only paying what is actually raised?
So you're saying if not enough is being raised, and they just start paying whatever is raised and it's below the approved amount, that would weaken the passing of the discretion and control test. The further you get it from tying it directly to the amount they raise, the better. So that's why I suggested you may be able to have some sort of policy that if you fall behind 1 month, we're not necessarily going to cut that. We're going to wait 3 months to see what happens, and then we're going to cut it to give you a chance to get caught back up. If you get caught back up, then we'll restore it. But if you never get caught back up, even to maybe, you know, the reduced level, then I think you need to have more conversations about what are we going to do here? Is the ministry going to absorb it, or?
So those ministries that don't actually set a salary level and only pay what is raised, they have problems.
They do. Yeah, if a ministry is not setting salaries and paying out whatever is raised, they have a hard time proving discretion and control over the funds. Definitely. And that's definitely a problem in some organizations, unfortunately. Yeah, because, yeah.
So I have a question back to doing an offering, or doing a, that wasn't really an offering to the church.
It was a fund.
Well, what if they'd have taken an offering up in church for the same cause? Would they receive a tax deductible? So if you know your church is going to take up an offering for Joe Blow that is on the mission field, and you give money to that offering because you know that's where it's going, is that tax deductible?
It's a hard question. It involves a few different variables. I think one would be whether that's a special offering or whether it's a regular offering. If you show up with money in your pocket Sunday morning and that's the scheduled offering and you give just like you normally do, I think you might be okay. But if it's a special evening offering, I don't know. You're given knowing exactly where it's going and you're given an extra gift to help a person.
But you're not the one that decided where
it's going. That's true.
The church decided where
it's going. That's true. So is the church exercising discretion and control? Are you intending to benefit the church or the worker? I think those are the questions.
How can you separate?
Does it make a difference if the church has a policy in place that they will provide transportation for somebody in this certain ministry? Like it's a written policy in the salary agreement that they hopefully should have for that.
I don't know if I have enough information to answer that question.
Can I modify the question? What if the church sets a precedent that they will twice a year take an offering that will be distributed among all of the VS workers in their congregation?
That's better, because now you have, if you have multiple workers, you're not specifying it for a particular worker. So you're getting further away from benefiting one individual. Again, I don't know if I have enough to answer that particular question. Again, if it's a regularly scheduled offering, I would feel better about it than if it's a special offering and you're giving knowing exactly who it's going to benefit. I think we're out of time. I'd be glad to stay back and talk to anyone about any more questions. Here are some resources. They're on the back of your notes. Again, this is the best resource I've ever found as far as, deputized fundraising, a lot of other things. And then that link to the article there is just a nice summary of the deputized fundraising program. So I'll turn it back to our moderator.
All right, thank you, Mr. Byler, for educating us on those details. One announcement, next session is at 5:30, and make your way there promptly. Thank you.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.